Welcome to Locked On Heat. On today's show, we'll talk about if James Johnson's recent surgery should be a concern for the Heat going forward.
Then we'll discuss if the Heat should target Andrew Wiggins in a trade and what they can do about Tyler Johnson's contract. Thank you so much for listening and for subscribing. Now let's get to the show.
You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, let's do this. Welcome to Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. My name is Wes Goldberg. I'm a credentialed writer covering the NBA for the Step Back, and I write for the Miami Heat's Tip Off magazine. You can find me on Twitter at WC Goldberg.
And I'm David Romello, credentialed NBA writer who's covered the Heat for SB Nation and AllYouCanHeat.com. I cover the league at large for Fanside. You can follow me and my writing on Twitter at DRomello13.
We'll open up the mailbag later on to talk about an Andrew Wiggins deal and what the Heat can do about Tyler Johnson's salary cap hit next season. But let's start with the news that James Johnson recently had surgery for a sports hernia. Now, normal recovery time for this sort of thing, David, is 6 to 12 weeks, and the Miami Herald is reporting that Johnson will have a full recovery in the next few weeks. But, David, how much do you think that this impacted James Johnson's season? Not that you're a doctor, but given the eye test.
Well, you know, one of the things that we talked about, and not specifically that I brought up before the Philadelphia series, was that I thought Johnson was best equipped to limit what Ben Simmons could do. And over the course of that series versus the 76ers, it actually looked like Justice Winslow was a little bit better prepared. Johnson just didn't seem to have the same kind of athleticism to match up with a guy like Simmons. You know, we've seen him limit LeBron James or at least stay with him for most of the game. We saw him defend Giannis Antetokounmpo pretty well. But against Simmons, even though he had had some success in the past, in the playoffs, that wasn't the case. So I wonder if the lingering effects of this injury were kind of impacting how he might have been able to defend Simmons. I'm not saying that if he had been healthy, it might have changed the series, but at least in his defensive efforts against Simmons, it looked like he wasn't able to quite get on top of him as quickly as possible. Like, he wasn't able to, like, body him up as soon as we'd like. Like, he was kind of giving him way too much space, sagging him off a little bit, and then letting Simmons drive into the paint or create an opportunity for somebody else. Whereas, you know, Winslow was able to really stay on Simmons much more closely and limit what he was able to do. And maybe that was just a little bit of intensity versus James Johnson. But, you know, that's never been the case with James. So I have to assume that there might have been something physically limiting him.
And for our listeners who don't know, a sports hernia would impact the lower body, to put it nicely, right? And mm-hmm. So I think it would make sense that his agility would be impacted, right? His ability to move side to side, I think, with an injury like this. And so that speaks to kind of what you're saying, right? With a guy like Ben Simmons, who you're constantly just trying to stay in front of, right, those side to side movements being limited could really hurt the way. Could really impact the way James Johnson picks him up. I also saw some people talking about whether or not this hurt his three-point shooting, and I thought that was an interesting thing because, you know, if you're not getting enough, if you're not able to completely explode from your lower body and get the most lift on your jump shot, then it would make sense, right, that your three-pointer isn't going down as much. But and you could look at what he may, you know, his three-point percentage his first season with Miami, which was 34%. Versus this year, which was 30%, that's a severe drop-off. And you wonder how long he was dealing with this injury. But you also look at that percentage, and it's right in line with his career average. So for me, I'm not sure that it I saw a lot of people talking that this might have been a cause for why his shooting wasn't as efficient this season. Right. I think it was more a regression to the mean for James Johnson's career. That 34% in his last season is a major outlier when you look at his stats per season. But I agree with you. I think maybe it was more of an issue towards the end of the season and in the playoffs. Maybe he couldn't be as effective. I will say this, though. Given that he was dealing with this, and I don't know how severe it was that he was dealing, all we know is that he had the surgery, right? Right. We don't really know how much it was bothering him. But if it was bothering him, I couldn't tell. Because like you said, at no point did I look at James Johnson and think, boy, he looks like there's something wrong with him. I think that different points during the season, his athleticism wasn't there, but that could have been for any number of issues. He played really hard in that playoff series, regardless of how effective he was. And on the offensive end, I thought he was really active. I mean, the one thing about James Johnson, he doesn't stop moving. He's always, it you know, the effectiveness of those movements and what he does on the floor could vary, but he's at least always moving. He's an extremely active player, and that speaks a lot to just his passion and drive and conditioning since he's come to Miami.
Yeah, I mean, you look at his three-point shooting, and in reality, he actually shot best over the latter part of the season. Like February and March, he actually shot over 35% for both of those months. He shot well in November, but he really struggled in October, in December, and in January. Those were where his worst shooting months, and then a little bit again in April in the last four games of the season. But so I don't know how much it really impacted him over the course of that. It might have been like a late season injury, maybe one incurred in March, impacting him in April and as the team moved into the playoffs. So who knows? Maybe it might have made a difference. Do you think? I mean, given how they were able to dominate us pretty clearly, and although some of those games were fairly close, do you think that the injury might have been the difference maker in the series against Philadelphia?
No.
Yeah, I don't think so either. It's tough to say, obviously.
Unless that hernia was like keeping him from transforming into LeBron James, I don't think it made a difference.
You never know. It could make the
difference. I don't know anything about hernias. I mean, maybe that's what it happens. Maybe I have a hernia, and that's why I'm not LeBron James. Look, are you concerned about Johnson's health going forward at all? Because, you know, the timetable for this is about 6 to 12 weeks. Even if it's 12 weeks, that's not going to, I mean, that would go into a little bit into training camp and stuff like that.
Right.
That would be worst case scenario, right, for James Johnson. Are you concerned at all that that might be the situation here?
Yes and no, not in the sense that I don't think it's going to have any kind of long-term ramifications. It seems to be mostly just kind of like I don't know what to call it exactly, but kind of clearing up like some things, trying to tidy up some loose ends, so to speak. As far as his impact overall, though, James is the kind of guy who strikes me as being like he needs this work in order to stay focused. You know, obviously he's been a journeyman over the course of his career. He's had issues with weight. Those issues were there before he came to Miami, and Miami kind of helped him clear those issues up. And then even at the start of last season, I personally thought he might have been a little heavier, although the team didn't say anything and neither did he. But he did struggle at first over the course of the season, and then he kind of got into shape, or at least seemed a little bit more fluid as the season progressed. So without those summer months there, without the kind of drive that he needs building into the season, I'm not sure if that's going to take something out of him. Maybe he'll start to improve over the course of the season. Maybe towards the end of it, he'll be, you know, pretty healthy and in great shape because he'll be somewhat rested from not having done so much work over the summer. But at the same time, he kind of needs that work, I think. In my opinion, it seems like it kind of helps keep him somewhat defined, you know what I'm saying? Like, rather than having the freedom and luxury of having too much time over the summer, kind of like when you were a kid and you had the summer vacation, all of a sudden you didn't have to go to school. And even for me, I remember like forgetting how to write things, you know, in handwriting, because it was just like over the course of 3 months, I never picked up a damn pencil. I was pretty much just sitting in front of the TV the whole time. Or at summer camp, you weren't writing very much. So for James, I wonder if like without those 3 months of work, whether or not he's going to come into camp a little bit out of shape and it's going to take him a little bit longer to get more involved.
The good news for James Johnson is that this is he hasn't undergone a lot of these sort of things. Like he's a player who has been largely durable for most of his career. He's 31 years old, and that could come into play here. But you know,
does it impact his trade value, you think?
I don't think so. I really think, like, I'm looking at the way that this, and, you know, maybe the Heat are getting ahead of it and gaming that scenario out where if they do need to trade him, they don't want to have to be answering these questions, and maybe that's why the reports that we're seeing right now are essentially just saying he underwent the surgery, he's going to be fine. Like, nobody seems like, none of the beat reporters are making a big deal out of this. Like, and maybe that's why I'm not necessarily making a big deal out of it, but I'm looking at his injury history right now, and it's things like bruised right ankle, tendonitis, sore shoulder, sprained ankle. Like, I'm just looking through his injury history, and that's kind of what has bothered him, which is nothing, and no one thing has really lingered. I'm not, when it comes to durability, I'm not necessarily concerned with James Johnson. To go back to what you said, it's been conditioning that's been his issue, not necessarily durability, and that to me is, if the recovery process of this carries on for the maximum, so to speak, 12 weeks here, then he is going to be out of condition. And it's going to take him a little bit longer to get into condition. And you can work through that in training camp and preseason and the start of the season. But if you're Miami and you're looking to improve on this last year, you don't want to deal with those things. But it's more of an inconvenience, I think, than something that than something that's going to be an extreme negative impact for the Heat. I don't think that they're going to necessarily lose games because of it. Right. And that's what's important here, I guess. So it sounds like James Johnson should be fine, but it's something we'll keep an eye on. There's been some scuttle that the Timberwolves could be looking to get to trade Andrew Wiggins this summer. We'll talk about that when we open up the mailbag next, and if the Heat should get involved after this quick break. Back with Locked On Heat, Tyler Johnson's contract will balloon to $19 million next season, and we'll talk about one option the Heat have to relieve that cap hit. But let's open up the mailbag and take this question first from Lunchmeat 1920.
Ooh.
That's some old Lunchmeat. That's old Lunchmeat.
The classic deli cut, you know, the 1920 bologna.
Don't eat the lunch meat, but Lunch Meat asks, how do you guys feel about a trade for Andrew Wiggins, and what do you think it would look like? David, this hit our inbox, I don't know, at some point in the last couple of days, and it was kind of interesting because you and I had been texting about this Andrew Wiggins idea. Like about a week ago, I think we started texting about it.
Right.
It's something to consider because let's first start here. Andrew Wiggins has been a disappointment as a first overall pick. I feel like he either plateaued or regressed this last year in Minnesota. His inefficiencies are well covered. He's a volume shooter, one of the worst defenders in the league at this point, despite being heralded as having all the skills to be a top-notch defensive player in the draft. But it doesn't assist a whole lot, an inconsistent rebounder. Just not a complete player by any means, but there's talent there, and it's enticing, and I understand why guys like Lunchmeat 1920 are asking this question, and why you and I have been asking this question privately via text message, and why we've been hit up about Andrew Wiggins a couple times on Twitter. The talent is there, and if there is a team that could unleash that talent, you would think it would be the Miami Heat, who have done such things for Deion Waiters and Wayne Ellington and James Johnson, who we just got done talking about. So how do you feel about an Andrew Wiggins trade?
I love the idea. I'm hesitant for one reason, and that's mostly because of his incoming salary. I know that's going to be, if any trade with Wiggins would mean that we'd be moving some salary. But I think that Wiggins is a potential star, to be honest with you. I like his attitude overall. I know that there have been some issues there. I know that there's been some talk about him being unable to coexist alongside Jimmy Butler. There is some duplication of skill set there. You know, Butler is a wing player just like Wiggins is supposed to be. Mm-hmm. And so maybe there's, some butting of heads there, trying to establish himself. And Jimmy Butler, being the all-star that he is more deserving of taking the brunt, the bulk of the shooting load for Minnesota. But I think he's got the skills. I don't know what it is that keeps Wiggins from being fully engaged. And you can't help but notice that he's 23. He's still young. He came into the league pretty much right after high school. He was such a young man when he came into the league, after 1 year in Kansas. I think he's still just kind of coming into his own. I think he's entering into his peak. And for a team like Miami that has lacked a superstar and is looking for ways to acquire one, this is the best bet. I think this is the best opportunity of doing something like that. And there's potential there. I think you can there's undoubtedly a gamble and a risk involved, but I think it might be a worthwhile one. And I think he's got all the tools to make him an outstanding wing player. He's long, he's athletic, he can shoot. I think his rebounding is something that could be improved on, and I think his defense clearly could be improved on. I think there's also the stigma or the weight that's attached to being the number one overall pick and a player that you traded your previous franchise player in Kevin Love in order to acquire. And so that's kind of difficult from a Minnesota fan perspective. And then, of course, the following year after Wiggins is acquired, you draft perhaps a generational type center in Karl Anthony Towns. The year after that, then you get Jimmy Butler, and who becomes the face of your franchise. So it's never quite worked out for Andrew. I still have faith that he's going to be able to take that leap, whether it's in Minnesota or elsewhere, remains to be seen.
He's a classic needs a change of scenery guy, right? I mean,
I think that's fair, yeah.
He's 23 years old and just signed this monster contract extension. You mentioned it. 4 years, $146 million, $146.5 million. And so he's going to be getting paid upwards of it's $25 million next year, $27 the year after that, $29 the year after that, $31 the year after that, and $33 million the year after that. That is a lot of money. The Timberwolves are going to have a hard time trading this version of Andrew Wiggins, right?
Right.
And
right.
And I've, you know, been reading some of the blogs and the newspapers and stuff and what they're talking about Wiggins. And they're, it's kind of interesting. They're talking about Wiggins almost the same way we're talking about Hassan Whiteside. In that, would we like to trade him because he's not worth, not that he's not a good player, but he's not worth the money that they're paying.
Right.
But, like, you know, we lay out all these different trade scenarios for Hassan Whiteside. And you and I feel like at the end of every conversation, we're like, yes, chances are he's going to end up being in Miami next year anyway.
Right.
And you, and I'm kind of getting that sense from the Minnesota beat writers and bloggers that they feel the same way about Wiggins. And look, Whiteside's making a lot of money. He's not making Wiggins money. That that Whiteside contract is a lot better than the Wiggins contract. He is not. He's making about $26 million max in that second year. And after next year, he's on an expiring contract. Wiggins is, I mean, Wiggins is going to be on your, he's under this contract until the next president. Like, now,
That's a lot of money. Yeah, it's scary to think about that. And you know, one of the things I think I've mentioned to you before, I'm pretty sure I've mentioned this, is that, you know, when I talk to some of the Wolves players specifically about that relationship between Butler and Wiggins, one of the things that Butler specifically spoke to me about was, as far as Wiggins' next step, as far as his overall evolution, he kept reiterating the same thing about work, work, work. Like, that gave me the impression that maybe Andrew isn't necessarily the kind of player at this point, at 23, as a relatively young man still, that is willing to do the work to take it to that next level. And that's, you know, a sharp contrast to Jimmy Butler, who is nothing but work to get to the point that he is at right now in his NBA career. So there's concerns there from the Heat perspective, whether or not he's going to be a player. If you're going to invest that kind of risk and money in paying him to be your superstar, you have to know what you're getting. And so there might be some concerns there as well.
Sure. But look, I mean, Wiggins to me, like, there's a work concern there that I agree with you on. Miami does tend to get guys to do the work, but
they have to want to be, they won't have to be hungry enough to want that. Yeah.
And you look at a guy like Deion and James who came over, they were on 1 year deals. They had to prove themselves. They had those prove themselves contracts. Wiggins is like, Wiggins is fine. Like, he could just not do a damn thing.
I'm a multimillionaire. Yeah, I'm
he's
set.
And he's literally set for life. I mean, he is making $27 million a season. He is good. Like,
did you hear about his recent issues with the Canadian national team?
No.
Oh, well, you know, obviously he's supposed to be the face of the franchise, the face of the Team Canada. And he doesn't want to because apparently he's bristled and he's had some issues in the past with Jay Triano, the former Phoenix Suns coach, who is the head of the Canadian national team. So he's flat out said that he's not going to join Team Canada.
I mean, if the Heat, if Pat Riley makes this deal, there's going to have to be a lot of background checks on this guy and really just like character checks and things like that. But I will say this. I feel like I've been bashing him the whole time. I would still make a deal for Wiggins. And I say it because the Heat just don't have many options to get to where they want to be. And Wiggins is one of those guys who has a skill set to create his own shot, make contested shots, and be the number one option on an offense. And I don't, and that's just something the Heat don't have. And he fits a lot of needs for them. Specifically, you know, length on the perimeter. If they can get him to pick up his game defensively, which we think Spoelstra could probably do, then there's a lot of improvement that he can make there. I mean, I look back to, you know, the Thunder trading Victor Oladipo for Paul George, and nobody thought that Oladipo had just signed a huge contract. Nobody thought he would be worth that contract. People thought that Oladipo would be virtually untradeable because of that contract. And look what he was able to do in Indiana. Now it's unfair again to compare Andrew Wiggins with an exception like Victor Oladipo. But if you're looking for something comparable, Wiggins is sort of the guy. I mean, this is a, you're looking for a guy who has the raw talent like Oladipo does, who probably needs a change of scenery like Oladipo did, and is going to a better situation like Andrew Wiggins would be and like Oladipo did going from Oklahoma City to Indiana. I think that was just a better situation for his skill set. So, look,
but there's you know, you pointed out in that great piece that you wrote about Oladipo's transformation over the summer, I think, I'm pretty sure it was something that you mentioned in your piece, or if not, I read about it elsewhere. But one of the things that he's mentioned before was that it was that 1 year in Oklahoma City alongside Russell Westbrook that really showed him, you know what, I've got to change my game. If there's going to be a time for me to take advantage of this and to become the player that a lot of people expect me to become, I have to do the work. And I don't know that Andrew's at that point yet. And that's the whole thing.
If he and that would be the guy, like Butler would be the guy to learn that from. I also wonder if if the Heat were to trade for Andrew Wiggins and maybe clear up some, I don't know, some of the clutter on this roster, some of the you know, duplications on this roster to get Wiggins, is there a space for Dwayne Wade to come back and sort of, because I think Dwayne Wade would be a great mentor for Andrew Wiggins.
I don't think so.
Really?
I still don't think so. You know, I have questions about his mentorship.
You could take Dwayne Wade, or Dwayne Wade could take Wiggins under his wing, send him to DBC Fitness where Victor Oladipo remade his body, where, you know, Dwayne Wade is a VIP member. Yeah. Like, I don't know. Maybe it's an option. I don't know. I would. That said, like, I think you and I are on the same, like, where the Heat are, not a whole lot of options. And this is, I don't call this low risk, high reward, because it's very high risk, high reward.
Absolutely. Yeah. It has the potential to be a disastrous move, it does. I think. For everything that we've said about Hassan Whiteside, to think about paying somebody who's underwhelming and not motivated on the floor an extra $10 million per year, ooh, that would be difficult. I can imagine a lot of Heat fans feeling very, very frustrated with seeing this guy be able to take off from the free throw line on a dunk and then just not be able to leap for a rebound. Like, we've seen that from him. Yeah. We've seen the ball sail over his head as his caroms off the rim and he kind of just watches it float by, knowing full well that with his length and athleticism, he could snatch that out of the air pretty easily and initiate a fast break. He just doesn't.
Well, what would the deal be then? Because I wouldn't trade like a Goran Dragic and a Justice Winslow. If the Timberwolves asked for Josh Richardson or Justice Winslow, I hang up the phone. I do. I think those contracts and those players' upside, I like what they have proven more than Andrew Wiggins so far. I hang up the phone. Not worth it. Now, that might be a deal breaker for Minnesota, but if I'm Pat Riley, my offer is Hassan Whiteside. Minnesota needs a rim protector badly. They need one and a rebounder badly, and that takes Karl Anthony Towns out of the five position where he's probably not ready to play on the defensive end just yet. You know, you let him play power forward next to Whiteside, take some of the responsibility of the rim protection off of Towns. So I would offer Whiteside and Dion Waiters for Andrew Wiggins and Gorgui Jang. And I think that that's taking two really bad contracts off of Minnesota's hands. Jang replaces Whiteside as just a rotational center. Still a really bad contract, but that would be the deal. Like, in lieu of not parting with Winslow or Richardson, I say I'm taking two bad deals off your hands. You're getting a Whiteside, not a great contract, but a position of need and a skill set that you really desperately need. And we're giving you a replacement score in Dion Waiters because they needed more of those kind of guys last season.
I still think you'd have to include Richardson. And,
You're probably right. And then I would hang up the phone. Would you hang up the phone?
I don't. Probably. I don't know. The opportunity to move Whiteside is so enticing, and I know I don't want to be so blinded by who we think Whiteside has become and the struggle of dealing with his personality, but at the same time, I just don't know if you're going to get another opportunity.
Richardson at like 9 to 12 million a year versus Wiggins at 33 million a year. I mean, there's no way I move Richardson in exchange for Wiggins. I don't care who else. I don't care what the other pieces are.
No, you're right. I don't know that. I don't know that Wiggins is a huge upgrade over what Richardson could potentially become.
Josh Richardson is a better player right now than Andrew Wiggins. I don't think that anybody that watches the NBA closely could argue that. I mean, what he's able to bring on the defensive end, and I mean, he's as good on the offensive end as Wiggins is. Wiggins is a volume scorer, I'll say that. He's a better shooter, but Wiggins, I think, runs pick and roll a little bit better. He's a little bit more versatile. As far as the things he can do, I feel like Wiggins is just like a spot up shooter at this point. I mean, and he's very inconsistent, and especially again, when it comes down to the contract and what he's able to bring defensively and the upside we think he has offensively, there's just no way. But Wiggins' upside is high, and I still would, if Minnesota is really looking to get off that contract because they understand that they're going to have to pay Towns, that they want to keep Jimmy Butler, that they're probably going to want to add another piece to that roster that's not Andrew Wiggins, then it makes sense for them to get off that long-term money and then take a couple of years of Whiteside, and that opens up your cap space a couple of years down the road as opposed to in the year 2023. I don't know. If you're Minnesota and you're doing that sort of math, if you're playing maybe a more long-term play, it could also make sense.
Of course, the best thing would be that they actually want to move Karl Anthony Towns and want to keep Andrew Wiggins for some reason, so that would be great.
All right, well, let's continue with our mailbag when we come back after this break. Back with Locked On Heat, let's take our final mailbag question of the day. This comes from Marcus, a Patreon supporter, who writes in, Will/should the Heat cut Tyler Johnson and stretch his cap hold over the next 5 years? So what Marcus is talking about here is the stretch provision, which is allowed within NBA rules. And basically what that dictates is that you pay out the remaining value of a contract over twice the remaining years of the deal plus one. So in this case, what Marcus is writing about the paying him over the next 5 years, Miami would be on the hook for paying Tyler Johnson about $7.7 million for each of the next five seasons. Now, of course, they would have to waive him, so they wouldn't have the benefit of having Tyler Johnson on the roster. So they'd be paying Tyler Johnson $7.7 million for each of the next five seasons. For the next half decade, they would have to pay Tyler Johnson that kind of money to not be on the roster. That's not been in Pat Riley or Andy Ellsberg's game. That hasn't been any NBA team's game plan. I don't know that anything like a stretch provision has been used like this in the history of the stretch provision being available. But this is a major cap hit for Tyler Johnson coming up. $19 million in each of the next two seasons. Would you consider it, David?
No, I would not. I think it doesn't get the team under the salary cap. And I just, looking at the history of this team and this front office, they've taken advantage of waived players that have been amnestied. You know, somebody like Mike Miller. I just don't know that they would be willing to do that for Tyler and still have him on the books. I think there's still a faith there that he could be a suitable role player in a reduced role. The role that he was supposed to have played this year if Deion Waiters had stayed healthy. So to me, I think that was the first domino that kind of changed the way that this team operated, was without Deion, without his playmaking and his volume scoring, without his willingness to score, that kind of fell onto other players that might not have been suited for that, Tyler being among them, you know. And I don't know that the team will look to waive him. So, I mean, as much as it's a great option, he's not a bad player. He's just not a player worth, you know, relatively worth $20 million per year. And so he'd be a free agent. He'd be able to sign elsewhere. Maybe go to Golden State, where he's originally from. That would be a great opportunity for him to become a role player there.
If you're the Heat, you're saving $11 to $12 million a year.
How's that?
If you waive him for $7.7 million, you'd be saving $11 to $12 million over the next 2 years. But then you'd be paying him almost $8 million for 3 years after that. When if you hadn't cut him, he would have been off your contract. He would have been off the books for you, right? Because he's under contract for two more years, which is really, it's not that long.
It's a relatively short amount of time, yeah.
It really is, and you combine that with Miami's realistic window here. They are not going to compete for a title in the next 2 years. They're just not. And so it really doesn't hurt to have Tyler Johnson on the roster. Now, that contract, every time people look at the salary cap figures, and you can do that by visiting our Patreon page at patreon.com/lockedonheat, where all of that is available to you, it stands out. I mean, he is going to be the second highest paid player on the roster next year, which is insane. But it doesn't really matter, because the Heat aren't going to compete for a title next year, and they're not going to compete for a title the year after that. They are a little ways away. Now, what Tyler Johnson unfortunately does prohibit is adding some maybe younger players of his age on lower salary who could develop, because it seems like Tyler Johnson is probably plateaued right about where he's at. So that hurts. But if you can't do something, I mean, look, the Rockets were able to build a contender with Ryan Anderson taking up $20 million of cap space. Like, there's other moves that you can make that get you where you need to be. Now, I do think that the Heat would entertain the stretch provision maybe briefly if it turned out that they could this summer sign a superstar. That some superstar just said, I want to go to Miami, and the only way that the math was going to work is if they waived Tyler Johnson and stretched his salary cap over the next 5 years, they would consider it. But I still think it's a long shot, because this team, you don't know what's going to happen in 4 or 5 years down the line, and having $7.7 million committed to a guy who doesn't play for you anymore could really hurt this team. Even if the salary cap does continue to go up in increments, I think it would just really hurt what they're able to do flexibility-wise. I would take the lack of flexibility over the next 2 years than a lack of flexibility over the next five.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely fair. Yeah, I think that's absolutely fair. And again, I think, you know, Tyler is seen from this team and this front office as a good, solid role player that can provide some adequate defense, some long-range shooting, some playmaking, some driving to the rim, etc. So to me, you know, are they overpaying him? I don't think there's anybody that thinks otherwise. But I think they're confident enough that they can get a top six-man candidate out of him if he was playing that role, and that's not what he was doing last season.
And we don't need to rehash it, but we said in our exit interview, too, that if Tyler Johnson was a starter because Deion Waiters was hurt, if Miami is able to get Deion Waiters back and healthy, Tyler Johnson returns to the bench and maybe has another year where he is a sixth man of the year contender. And again, that contract won't look worth it, but it'll look better than what we were getting from Tyler this last year.
Absolutely.
Well, that's all we have for today. Thank you for listening. Send us your questions and comments by emailing us at lockedonheat@gmail.com. or using the hashtag AskLOHeat, and support the show by visiting our Patreon page at patreon.com/lockedonheat. Music is courtesy of Mojave Wild. We'll catch you next time. Thanks for joining me, David.
You got it, Wes.